This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn.
This is a CBS News special, Earth Day, a question of survival, with CBS News correspondent Walter Cronkite.
Good evening. A unique day in American history is ending, a day set aside for a nationwide outpouring of mankind seeking its own survival. Earth Day, a day dedicated to enlisting all the citizens of a bountiful country in the common cause of saving life from the deadly byproducts of that bounty, the fouled skies, the filthy waters, the littered earth. As a demonstration, often its protests appeared frivolous, its protesters curiously carefree. Yet the gravity of the message of Earth Day still came through. Act or die. We begin our report with Bruce Morton in Denver.
Place for Purple Mountain's majesty. A place
where... Just make sure you talk right.
That was the evening of April 22nd, 1970. By the end of that year, the first Earth Day had led to the creation of the United States Environmental Protection Agency and the passage of the Clean Air, Clean Water, and Endangered Species Acts. As we mark the 49th Earth Day today, live on location at the Southwest Florida Community Foundation's Collaboratory in downtown Fort Myers, there is growing consensus among Southwest Floridians, bipartisan consensus, that something needs to be done to address both the global threat of climate change, rising seas, and more intense storm systems. But the local threats from things like harmful algal blooms, fueled by a complicated combination of pollution sources that we are all probably in some way contributing to on some level. We're going to start off today's show with an announcement of a new partnership to align the community in an effort to address issues related to our region's changing climate. I am joined by Dr. Heather Scazza-Acosta. She is the Director of Education at the Conservancy of Southwest Florida and an assistant professor in the Department of Marine and Ecological Sciences at Florida Gulf Coast University. Heather, welcome back to the show, and thanks for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me.
We're also talking with Sarah Owen. She is the President and CEO of the Southwest Florida Community Foundation. It's great to see you again, too.
Great to be here.
And before we hear that announcement, even though we're live on location, we do still invite you to join our conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So what is the big announcement?
So we're very excited to announce a new initiative called Growing Climate Solutions, Path to Positive Southwest Florida. And the four founding partners are the Community Foundation of Collier County, the Southwest Florida Community Foundation, the Conservancy of Southwest Florida, and Florida Gulf Coast University. This initiative is really focused on education and outreach in Southwest Florida and gathering more partners from across sectors, because climate change and its impacts are something that we know is going to affect all areas of life in Southwest Florida. So we're inviting partners in health, education, real estate, you name it, to join the conversation and to become more informed about how climate change is going to affect what they do. And a big part of this is also education and outreach for the public as well, knowing that the time has really come for the public to be engaged and interested. And we know that Southwest Floridians want to know more and want to engage with issues around climate change. And that's what we intend to do.
It's kind of a challenge. There's a lot to take in. And climate change seems like such a big thing. How can tiny little Southwest Florida do anything about it? What are some of the goals? What do you hope to have people feel they can achieve?
So some of the things that we really want to do, invite people to the conversation to improve their environmental literacy. We really want to focus on a prosperous and healthy community, which is why our health partners are so important. Really, the first thing is to really get people informed and make them know that they can act to impact change in some way towards climate change and its impacts. And you're right, it is a very complex system. It's not one that is easily understood, but our goal is to really invite people from all areas so that people, everyone, all Southwest Floridians can find where they connect to the issue and the parts of it that are really important to their lives.
I think it's kind of interesting, too, to have a local conversation with local people about things that are going on here, so it doesn't seem as far away as the polar ice caps.
Absolutely. And really, when we look at South Florida, we're on the front lines for climate change in many ways. So many people have already said that they see that sea levels are rising, that we have an increase in extreme weather events. They're seeing how it impacts our most beloved ecosystems like our mangroves. And so people really do want more information because they're noticing the impacts already.
So Sarah Owen, how did the Southwest Florida Community Foundation decide to get involved?
Well, I think Heather hit on something that's so important to us, which is this idea of listening and bringing people together. I mean, here we sit today in a building built specifically to bring cross sections of people together to find solutions, not prescribing what we should do, but inspiring people to come together. So the Community Foundation of Collier County, their team, Eileen Conley Kessler and their board, it was a natural fit. It was something we could work on together as a region. Us playing a regional role and then getting hyper-local with different groups and partnerships. So it was a chance for us to partner with people that we know have the same outlook on how to create change. And it just fits so closely with our message of how are we going to do this together, not through fear, but through inspiration.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that you point that out, because a lot of times discussions about the environment or climate change can sound like a tisking from on high. Right. So having people come together and have a conversation about what really, really what are we facing and what are we truly, truly seeing right now? What are the projections? And then coming together as a group of local people to talk about what kind of things we can do to mitigate or prepare for the ultimate challenges that we're going to have.
Yeah. And I think sometimes getting a lot of different opinions from all sorts of people, all walks of life, is so important, because I think some of us come in with preconceived notions about climate action or climate solutions. We think it's just the environment, but there's not a single cause that people in our region don't care about. Women and girls, animals, health and safety. That is all encompassed as we look at climate. Sometimes people want to just pass it off as like an environmental action, but it's not. It's all of our lives are surrounded by this. Just think of the hurricane and how we were all impacted by that. That wasn't just an environmental issue. That was a life issue.
Yeah, and the blue-green algae from last year and the red tide, that whole thing, everything that was very economic, that really hit a lot of people very hard last year. Then health and wellness, Department of Health getting involved and monitoring air samples. There's a lot to really unpack with all the different things that have happened just in the last couple of years. So this partnership in some ways grew out of a climate change survey that was released back in February?
It was, yes, and it was conducted in fall of 2018, in which Southwest Floridians were polled for their perceptions of climate change and its impacts, and really thinking about the things that were important to them and the things that they felt to be true about climate change. And what we saw was that overwhelmingly, Southwest Floridians agree that climate change and its impacts are already being felt in Southwest Florida, and that they're ready to make change and be a part of this conversation.
Were you surprised when you saw those results?
It is a little surprising, I think, because we think of this region in some ways as being resistant to those messages. But I think, again, that we're in a location where you are starting to see the impacts, and people aren't ignoring kind of the ways in which their lives have changed or the ways in which their community has changed as a result of these impacts. It's very important.
Mm-hmm. Well, when that survey was released, we had Jennifer Watson Roberts from Eco America on our show. She's that organization is who produced the Southwest Florida American Climate Metrics Survey, which is what we're referring to, which showed almost surprising bipartisan support for taking active measures to slow down climate change. Let's hear a bit of that interview now.
Do you feel like we may have turned a corner politically to where we can be unified and understand that the environment is being threatened by climate change?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the big supporters of these results and of taking action is Congressman Rooney, who represents much of this area. And he has actually gotten this briefing on our survey results. And he has worked with, you know, your new governor in helping create that Office of Resiliency. So we absolutely believe that it is a bipartisan issue, that Republican attitudes are changing as well. We know that Democrats have supported climate solutions for longer, but I believe what we know from the statistics that is narrowing, that gap is narrowing. And this consensus, you're absolutely right, there are quite a few conservatives, quite a few Republicans in the area, and the consensus is that their health is being harmed, the government has a responsibility. Clean air and clean water are a right. Those are some of the values that came out of this survey. And the number of people who've actually personally already taken action, like getting more energy efficient homes, buying hybrid cars, these things are already happening here in Southwest Florida.
So with that part of the conversation, I wanted to ask both of you, do you feel like we might be at a turning point here in Southwest Florida, kind of like we were back in 1970 on the first Earth Day, when we have everybody kind of in agreement something needs to happen?
I really do, because I think it comes down to evidence that they can kind of see with their own eyes. You know, human beings aren't especially good at thinking about such complexity and things that usually take place over very long time periods and very large scales. But when we can see it happening in our own community during our own lifetimes, it really unifies people behind making their lives better. And this is going to be one of the things that they really need to think about in the future.
Do you see that, Sarah, as well? Maybe a possible point of unity?
I do, because I think people can feel empowered to take action on the level that they want to. I think that's what the survey showed. You know, everybody wasn't in complete agreement on the survey about the specifics, but on the bigger picture of, hey, if I can do something for my great-great-grandchildren right now, I want to take that step. And I think when people see down the road a goal and then know that they can take small actions to get there, it's time.
And it sounds like the Growing Climate Solutions organization, this group, is going to be less about looking for someone to blame for everything and more about looking at what the solutions could be.
Yes, no tisking, just inspiration.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Dr. Heather Scazza-Acosta is Director of Education at the Conservancy of Southwest Florida and an assistant professor in the Department of Marine and Ecological Sciences at Florida Gulf Coast University. Heather, thanks for meeting us out here.
Thank you so much.
And Sarah Owen, President and CEO of Southwest Florida Community Foundation, thanks for coming on over from your office.
Absolutely.
It's so great, and you've been so welcoming to us coming to visit here and do this show live.
We're happy to have you here.
It's so fun. If you're just joining the show today, we're marking Earth Day on the road at the Southwest Florida Community Foundation's Collaboratory in downtown Fort Myers. I'm turning now to men who have been directly on the front lines of the water quality issues that we've been facing, including the long red tide bloom along the coast and the toxic blue-green algae bloom that started in Lake Okeechobee and wound up choking waterways all the way to the Gulf. John Cassani is the Colusa Waterkeeper. It's a nonprofit dedicated to the protection of local waters and their watersheds through education and promotion of responsible use and enjoyment by all people. John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Julie.
It's so great to see you again. We're also joined by Captain Daniel Andrews. He is the founder of Captains for Clean Water, a grassroots nonprofit that advocates for clean water and healthy estuaries across Southwest Florida. Started out as a group of fishing guides that had just had enough of Florida's poor water management practices because they had become convinced that if everyone knew what they knew, the problem would have been already fixed. Daniel, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thanks for having me, Julie.
And if you'd like to participate in our conversation, give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Daniel, at the end of your about statement on your website, it says, quote, "We discovered the solution has been delayed for decades because of a lack of political will and public awareness," end quote. Do you think that those two factors are changing or maybe have changed?
Well, I think they definitely need to change, and I think we're approaching that cusp now. This issue has gone from something that was in a lot of people kind of in their background of their mind, and now, you know, with these algal blooms that we've had affecting our community, really everybody living across South Florida, that was kind of the needle that made it such an important issue of public discussion, and that's why we're seeing progress on this now.
Have you been able to get out on the water at all much lately?
I have not, but I hope to real soon.
Because you're too busy wearing a tie.
Yeah, I'm in the office all the time now.
I'm wondering how it is out there. Have you heard from anybody how the fishing is?
It's been really good. Yeah, the last few weeks have been really good. The water's clear. It looks healthy. Now, obviously, there's a huge missing part of the environment out there that died from the red tide. But I think just the fact that people are out there fishing right now, they're catching fish, they're taking people out, they're having a great time, it shows how resilient nature is if given the opportunity. And that's where we, as a, you know, humanity, have really failed, is we haven't given those opportunities for the ecosystems to recover.
Exactly. John Cassani, I want to ask you, how is the water right now?
Yeah, as Captain Daniel said, it's the water's clear, which a lot of people interpret as being better, but we're also interested in what's in the water while it's clear. Mm-hmm. So we like to see lots of fish, and as Captain Daniel said the recovery process may take a while, so may take a couple of years before we see the level of fish concentrations that perhaps were here.
And that's the water out in the Gulf that's looking clear and doing. How's the river looking?
Pine Island Sound, Mattache Pass. The river, you know, we've been looking at some sustained lake releases and a little bit of basin runoff during the dry season. So it varies a little bit. Not quite as nice as Pine Island Sound in the Gulf, mm-hmm. but you know, we're closer to the discharges here, so we see a little bit less improvement here.
I remember last year at the beginning of the summertime, we were looking at a really algae-covered lake and knowing that the wet season was upon us and water was being released fairly early on last year. What is the lake looking like now compared to last year as far as the blue-green algae?
Yeah, actually, I flew the river, the freshwater reach, yesterday and a little bit of the western lake, and actually it looked pretty good right now. So water temperatures are relatively low, cyanobacteria like really warm water. So, you know, we kind of have our fingers crossed, hope it won't happen again this year, but the conditions aren't really ripe for a cyanobloom at this time. So we're thinking hopefully it'll stay this way and we won't see a repeat of last year.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can stand a repeat of last year. And I'm wondering, I'm sure both of you have been keeping an eye on what's happening with the legislature, the state legislature. Has there been any action? I know that we heard at the beginning of the legislative session a big promise for a lot of funding and a lot of attention being paid on the environmental front. But after those announcements were initially made, the question then became, what is the legislature going to do with all that? Has anything happened? Have you guys been keeping an eye on that?
Well, I think that's something we're going to see this week, you know, a more detailed version of the budget. You know, the initial reaction to Governor DeSantis' budget requests were not very favorable. And then as time went on, you know, and again, because this is the number one issue in the state of Florida, there was a little bit of change of attitude. And we heard, okay, we are going to get this budget. I think it's also really important that, you know, this is a huge step in the right direction, this amount of funding. But really, you know, if we take a step back and look at the bigger picture, this is really just a first step. You know, this is something that we need to see continue on in the future and also something that needs to be built upon. It's not something they can say, all right, we did our job in 2019, we're done. No, that's not what needs to happen. This needs to be a first step.
Yeah, I'm wondering if John Cassani, if you've heard of anything in the way of stepped up testing that's being done officially, or are you guys just doing that yourselves?
Yeah, from the
testing
legislative.
The water. Yeah, have you heard anything from the legislative session about taking a more hands-on approach to seeing what the bacteria levels are in the water, cyanobacteria levels, what the red tide levels are? Because I remember last year we had a hard time pinning down anybody that was actually doing that testing in an official state capacity, and it seemed to be like people filling in that void, people like the Colusa Waterkeeper and other nonprofit organizations tended to be doing that.
Yeah, if you talk to an ecologist, he'll tell you you can never have enough data. And we're finding if there isn't political will, sometimes there's never enough science to make things happen in a regulatory context. But we're seeing some progress in this session. I think enforcement and compliance, you know, has to be there. You can't just throw money at it and expect it to improve. And agencies can do a lot on their own without legislative reform, if you will. So the potential's out there. The budget looks good, as Captain Andrew says, and we're just hoping that we'll keep moving forward and doing something more progressive on water quality.
Yeah, I remember right after those announcements were made, it was a pretty exciting time at the beginning of this year. And so seeing that the legislature appears to be following through, that's promising. But, of course, you know, if you're like me and you're from Missouri, as the show me state. Show
exactly.
Me when you got it figured out. I'm going to bring in Ed Shanuskas. He is I'm going to have him be part of the conversation. I understand that you're a volunteer ranger and you do a lot of water sampling.
Yeah.
You've been out on the water lately?
My wife and I work very closely with John. We've been doing some of the testing on Billy's Creek and the Caloosahatchee and some of the tributaries into Estero Bay.
Mm-hmm. So what is your background?
I actually have an undergrad degree in chemistry. My wife is a chemical engineer, so we're kind of well suited to this. We've done a lot of laboratory work and testing in the past, and granted, we haven't done it for a few decades, but mm-hmm. It's kind of good to get back into it, and this is a great way for us to give back, and it's been a big help for us in educating us what's going on and helping us educate our neighbors and friends.
Mm-hmm. John, how many people do you have like Ed who are out there volunteering their time to get these kinds of samples?
Yeah, I'm proud to say we're up to almost 60. We have two training academies a year, and about 15 or 20 per academy. So Ed and Chris Shinoskis are like our star players and tremendous background as engineers, as chemists. So we probably abused them a little too much along the way. But
make them be on the radio and stuff.
We so much appreciate their volunteer. They don't do this for no pay at all. I mean, they're doing this for their concern about the waterways on their own time, and we really appreciate that.
Well, it's interesting the role that science has played, and we have a lot of armchair scientists in the world these days that feel like they know everything about where it's coming from and why it's happening and stuff. And part of the responsibility that I think we all have is getting this data and putting the actual data and facts out in front of people. So, Ed, what are you seeing out there now? Is it looking okay?
I would say things look good, like John said, and Captain Daniels. The water looks better. We're beginning to see fish. I saw mullet jumping last week for the first time in a long, long time. People are enjoying the water, but there's still issues. And you know, we're all concerned about the coming summer. We're concerned about some of the bacterial impairments out there today, and we need to keep focused on this. And I think that's one of our problems is things start to look better, people start to relax, and we can't. We've got to stay focused.
We had a person call in asking, Stephen from Fort Myers, he was wondering about dead zones. Are we still seeing dead zones out there in the water, or have you heard anything more about issues like that out in the Gulf?
No, I think the dead zone was kind of defined as where the oxygen concentration in the water has gotten so low that the fish and invertebrates just can't survive. I'm pretty sure that's over. Captain Daniel, I'm not sure if you're seeing that now, but as far as I know, it's passed.
Yeah, I think most of the areas, they have normal oxygen levels now. But I think, you know, kind of another aspect to that, you know, it's that's the scientific definition of a dead zone. But it's something to just to stay cognizant of as we work to fix these problems and hopefully get to the point where we can actually restore some of this habitat. You know, even if we had all of our water problems fixed in the Caloosahatchee River right now, and we began a very ambitious plan of replanting seagrass and oysters, it would still probably take a decade or so for that to all mature in the Caloosahatchee. So it's those things where you see an immediate recovery once the water's back to normal, you know, once we're not getting discharges from Lake Okeechobee or, you know, any other outside factor. But, you know, for that seagrass to regrow, it takes a very long time. So it's something that we owe to future generations to work as hard as we can, not just to get the problem fixed, but once you get the water problems right, to also restore the habitat.
Yeah, I remember a couple of trials were done with regrowing seagrass with the Charlotte Harbor Group. They were out there with little cages over it so that the little baby seagrass wasn't getting eaten by the manatees. They had to protect it so that it could actually grow all the way up. John, I understand that the Colusa Waterkeeper is part of pursuing a lawsuit. Can you tell me a little bit about that, or is that going forward?
Yeah, one of the primary issues we're focused on is the lake regulation schedule. And that schedule was supposed to have been revised back in 2010. We think it's long overdue for a revision, and the Army Corps of Engineers is starting that process. But we filed a notice of intent to sue the Army Corps of Engineers and the service agencies on December 19th. And we're in a negotiating mode right now with them. So we may still end up in court, but there's so much more improvement that can occur by revising the schedule so that it benefits a broader constituency of interest groups rather than just one or two. So there's a lot can be done. The National Environmental Policy Act requires that more be done, and this should have started a decade ago. So we're going to try to push that process along and perhaps in court if need be.
How has the turnover of the
supply side of that about being having more equity in operating the schedule, at least their role in operating the schedule? So we have hope that, we'll see improvement there as well.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, before we went on the air, I asked everybody if they remembered the first Earth Day. Do you remember much about it?
Yeah, I do. I was just starting high school then, and I kind of remember from years earlier in the 60s and earlier 70s that air pollution was so bad. My brothers and I sat in the back seat of our station wagon, and we'd try to hold our breath as we crossed the Mississippi Bridge at St. Louis because I have just vivid memories of how foul the air was back then. Clean Air Act was reauthorized in 1970. So if you're less than 35 years old, you don't remember how foul and bad and polluted our air and waters were in the 60s and early 70s. We've come a long way. We can't go back. We can't look back on this and say we're not going to keep the faith and keep doing it.
Do you feel like we may have kind of backslided a little bit, but then do you feel maybe, and maybe I'm kind of Polly Sunshine here with my optimism, we've reached a point where people see that this is an issue that we're dealing with the water situation here and maybe coming together in a bipartisan way to make some changes?
I've got to believe that, Julie, that we are. There really is no other acceptable outcome than to come together in a bipartisan way to improve this situation. Unfortunately, the federal government's not really going in the right direction at this time as they try to revise the Waters of the U.S. rule. It's not a good direction to be going. But I think the response to this will be that people see how important it is to keep these regulations in place for public health and the environment. And I think we're going to see a rising up of people that might even start a new environmental movement in this country.
I think it's really interesting that it's happening here in Florida. And I really do, because it's really kind of a frontline situation for this state.
Yeah, Florida's growing so fast, extraordinarily fast, and the stakes are high. And we've only got so much time to really get it right. And that's why I think the governor is so focused on environmental issues, especially water quality. We're doing better on land conservation and acquisition, and or at least what's proposed looks better. Mm-hmm. So the hope's there that we'll follow through.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you a little bit about what the Colusa Waterkeeper is doing to mark Earth Day this week. You have some events coming up?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked. We have a week-long celebration that we call the Big Colusa. Our executive director, Casey Schulberg, has just worked endlessly to promote this event. We're having an event this evening at Millennial Brewing, a culture night on Wednesday the 24th, and then the big events are on April 27th and 28th, next Saturday and Sunday. So a little something for everybody, kids and family. It's all about celebrating the resource. We'll hope you come out. You can get the information on our website or our Facebook page.
All right, yes. It's more like Earth Week instead of Earth Day. Leave it to the Colusa Waterkeeper to make it that way and stretch that thing out.
We've got a lot to celebrate.
Captain Andrews, you think you're going to be getting out on the water this week?
Unfortunately, I'm in the office all week, but looking out at the skies right now.
It's so perfect.
I certainly wish I was out on the water this week.
I know, I hate to keep throwing that at you, but every time I see you, I just want you to get back out on your boat.
That's my goal.
Although I am grateful for all of the hard work that you're doing at this point and what you're doing. So anyway, Daniel Andrews is the founder of Captains for Clean Water. Daniel, it's been so great talking with you again.
Thanks for having me.
And John Cassani is the Colusa Waterkeeper. John, thanks to you as well.
Oh, good to be here as always.
I also want to thank Ed Shanuskas, who is a volunteer ranger with Colusa Waterkeeper. Ed, thanks for being here, and thanks for all your volunteer work.
Thanks, Julie.
Thanks. We are marking Earth Day today at the Southwest Florida Community Foundation's Collaboratory in downtown Fort Myers. How are you marking Earth Day? What steps have you taken in your life to reduce your environmental impact? To add your voice to our discussion, give us a call now at 877 828-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. We're now going to turn to Paul Shariari, correct?
Perfect.
I already asked you earlier, and then, of course, I forgot. It's very simple. It's exactly how it's spelled. Sorry. So Paul Shariari is the founder and owner of the startup Ecomedes Incorporated, whose office is located right here in the Collaboratory. In fact, I can see it out the corner of my eye. He's been a sustainability consultant for more than 20 years and has now developed a website and app that helps people make better, greener decisions about the products they use in their lives and to help builders and building designers make smarter, greener decisions about the building materials and building designs. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So tell me about your company. How did this come to be?
So I've been a consultant in the space for about 20 years now and always focused on helping people make better decisions driven by data. As an engineer, I went to the University of Florida, grew up in Indian Rocks Beach, Florida, most of my life. And every time I got on a project, people invariably ask, well, what's the better product? What is it going to save me? How much energy? How much water? And that becomes a math problem. What's the return on investment that we mm-hmm. always talk about? So having done that work, I just found that getting the data was very hard. We renovated a house in Cape Coral, and I had to convince myself, even knowing all the stuff that I know, that this is the better window, this is the better appliance, this is the better flooring, this is the better toilet, this is the better light. And I realized that without giving that data over to make people's decisions easier, it was going to be really hard to make a better choice.
So are you mostly aimed at builders and architects or everyday people or both?
Everyday people. Actually, when we started gathering the data, some of our early clients were some of the lighthouse brands in the building environment space, but we did some work with the federal government several years back, and we got all the Energy Star data, all the WaterSense data. So even though we are focused on kind of commercialized decisions at scale so we can make the biggest impact, anybody can use the site. We designed it very simply to where it feels and looks like an Amazon website. It just happens to have all the things that go into our buildings that save you energy, water, maintenance, things like that.
I think it's interesting talking about people's behavior when they're making those purchases too.
Yeah.
Because I've booked airline tickets and made poor decisions on timing based on a $20 savings.
Sure.
Do people look at purchases for their home in the same way? Do they want to try to chase that discount?
It's a great analogy. I think we have way more apps to help us make better decisions around the airline fare or the hotels. But what's really difficult about building decisions is that, unlike airfare, travel, and hotel, three categories, a building might have 1,500 categories of decisions. So it's very, very difficult to kind of balance out all the stuff, and especially when you're trying to make a very cost-driven decision up front. But what we don't realize is that our houses, our buildings, they run 24/7, 365. So if you make a bad decision and it needs too much, then you're going to be essentially running a very, very expensive car, but 24 hours a day, and that can really kind of add up. And if we all make better decisions, we can actually make a huge impact by not really doing too much hard work.
So it's worth the extra $20 to get the thing.
Because it might pay you back $200. A good set of light bulbs might cost you $20 at Home Depot and Lowe's today, but over the course of your 10-year lifespan of those bulbs, you'll put $250 back in your pocket.
So that's the kind of data then that your website provides.
Everything. We basically do all the engineering and consulting I've done for over 20 years is completely automated for anyone to be able to just know, these are the best light bulbs, I need this many, they're going to last this long, this is how much energy you're going to save.
So somebody's, say they're looking at their house and they have to get a new roof, for example. Maybe this is a time to start considering maybe solar. They would go to your website and be able to look at all the different options and what the cost is and what the savings would be?
Yeah. Ecomedes is the largest database in the world. It has over 360,000 different products across energy and water categories that can save you a ton of money. And we basically do all the math. So we'll tell you how much you'll save in both kilowatts and dollars or gallons and dollars. And also, if you're trying to do a more sustainable project like the building we're in today is a LEED certified building, we actually do all the documentation for that submittal.
So, but do companies come to you and say, hey, look at this great new light bulb we have. If we give you $20, will you put it on your website and rank it higher?
Yeah, no, we don't do that. What we do now is we actually take data in directly from all the eco labels like Energy Star and WaterSense to where the performance data is coming directly from those registries. It's very important to have that high level bar where we're taking in that performance data directly by the people that have certified those products, not necessarily letting marketing, because there's a lot of greenwashing that goes on and has been for 20 years and probably will never go away. But we try to make sure that all the performance data is coming from, and when you hover over any of that data on our site, it'll tell you who gave it to us, when they gave it to us, so you know the freshness of that data.
It's like that big yellow sticker that you see on a fridge.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of stuff.
yeah, we try to make that a little more palatable because most people don't understand what all that data is. So we try to make it, you know, what does it mean to me? So if I did all new appliances, this is what it would mean to me.
So I understand you're kind of relaunching your website today.
We actually are launching a version for Southwest Florida called the collaboratory.ecomedies.com and allow you to be able to take a look at all those products that we use both in the collaboratory, but everything in those same product categories so that anybody in Southwest Florida, resident, homeowner, organization, business can all do the same things we did here and kind of use that moving forward.
We have a call coming in from Joey in Estero. Joey, what would you like to ask? Joey, you're there? Are you with it? Okay. Well, we can't hear you, Joey. I'm so sorry. But if you could tell our producer in the studio what your question is, she can send that to us and we can go ahead and ask that question on your behalf, even if we don't hear your actual voice. But we'll get that question out there. So what are some of the categories of products that everyday people might turn to your service to find green choices for? What are people most interested in checking out? Do you keep data on?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really nice about having a web-based platform. You can actually see what people are looking at mostly. Watson Water seem to drive the majority of the responses. And
water?
Watson Water, both saving energy and water, saves you dollars and cents. So that's kind of the biggest driver.
Especially with air conditioning.
Yeah, exactly. So anything that uses energy, uses water in a building, we try to make sure everybody has access to the best products in all those categories, appliances, toilets, shower heads, faucets, lighting is really big. Lighting's an easy thing to do, saves you money, and you know, just get on a ladder and screw the bad one out and screw the good one in and enjoy 10, 15, 20 years in some cases of its life, constantly saving you money.
And I'm wondering about now building materials with windows.
Yeah, windows are important. There's an Energy Star rating for that, so we have some of those products in there as well. Some of the roofing products, as you mentioned, that have high reflectance. You know, we're in a hot, humid climate, so you don't want a black roof, you know, heating up all the time and then transferring all that heat into your house.
Exactly. Yeah. But you go all the way down to cleaning products, too.
Yeah, there's an EPA level for cleaning products called Safer Choice. We're proud to have everything that's green to clean your building or your home in. I mean, sustainability is a very broad umbrella. So
I'm going all the way to landscaping now, too.
Yeah, there's irrigation controllers that are tied to the weather. So, you know, you've probably driven around Florida in the rain and you see half the neighbors have their sprinkler system on. These systems have a weather-based controller. They won't, if weather's coming, it won't even do it if tomorrow's forecast says there's going to be rain.
So there are small changes people can make with the light bulbs. And then there are the bigger changes like replacing all your windows and having more efficient windows. But if everyone listening right now switched over to LED lights and better toilets, would that have a pretty significant impact on our situation?
As Southwest Florida, we'd probably first and foremost save millions of dollars a year on those two resources, but more importantly, less energy would be coming off the grid from coal and natural gas, and also we wouldn't have to be treating as much water in our communities.
Is it easier to get people to make these small decisions about changing their lights and things like that than it is to actually try to create policy requiring changing building materials?
I would love to say that policy can drive it, but I think small decisions made by consumers, the market drives every decision that we really want to go for fast. So if we can get people to make smaller decisions and push with their wallets, then a lot of great stuff can happen. And it's a great return on investment for the person making that better purchase.
Mm-hmm. Well, it looks like we lost Joey from Estero who had his question to ask us, and I haven't gotten his question through our computer. But I would like to encourage Joey to hop on Facebook and ask that question of us, and we'll try to get an answer for you. Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, so every 2 weeks we're going to be doing training around the collaboratory.ecomedies.com. So anyone from the community can come in. We're going to schedule those webinars or live presentations where we want to have everyone using the platform to make better decisions because so much real estate transacts here every single week in Southwest Florida, and everyone's doing small remodels. If they've bought a product and they don't want the house exactly as they got it, so please come on in. Commercial buildings, doesn't matter. We'll love to train you up and get you to use the free site.
Oh, that's great because, I mean, you're right. There are a lot of houses that get purchased, and almost always they end up getting remodeled in some small or large way. So it happens. Well, Paul Shariari. I apologize. He's founder and owner of the startup Ecomedies Incorporated, located right here in Southwest Florida Community Foundation's Collaboratory. Paul, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Julie.
And thanks for your generous kindness and the way I pronounced your name.
Oh, that's
I apologize again. If you're just tuning in, we're live on location this hour in downtown Fort Myers, the Southwest Florida Community Foundation's Collaboratory. We're marking Earth Day with people who are fighting for Southwest Florida's environment and the animals who call it home. Joining me now for the rest of the hour is a woman who is definitely on the front lines when it comes to trying to save wildlife. Heather Barron is Medical and Research Director at Crow on Sanibel. Heather, welcome back to the show. It's great to see you.
It's good to see you again, Julie. This is such a great way to celebrate Earth Day.
It really is, and it's good to see that you're standing. I know you've been incredibly busy for, what, 2 years nonstop?
Pretty much nonstop, yeah. The patient load just continues to go up and up every year.
Yeah, it does. Well, we only have a few minutes left, so we're no longer taking calls, but I would like to encourage people to weigh in on our show today via social media. You can catch us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, or on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So Heather, how are things going out there?
Well, we're very busy. Fortunately, not as busy as we were with red tide patients last year. We only have about a third as many red tide patients because, of course, those things do linger in the environment. And so we will occasionally still see birds coming in with red tide poisoning. But our overall caseload is the greatest it's ever been by this time in the year. And I think that's due to a lot of things. First of all, people are more aware that we're here for injured or ill wildlife, and that's very much to thanks to people like you. And
well, you were in the news a lot for the last year.
Yes, and so that's really increased awareness. But I think also it's the impact of a growing population here in Southwest Florida.
Can you talk a little bit about the arc that you went through between the red tide bloom and then the blue-green algae bloom on top of it?
Well, certainly both kept us very busy. And I think that, you know, we're really about trying to prevent some of these things. And so we became much more busy with both research and education. So all those things combined, yes, made it a very busy 2018. And so far, 2019
has been busy as well. Well, because everybody heard about you, you know, so everybody knows that you're there. How much different was life at Crow like before red tide?
Well, I think, you know, again, a big part of what we're trying to do out there is education. Earth is in the middle of the sixth great extinction, and that's an anthropogenic extinction. This year's theme for Earth Day is protect our species, and that's really what we're trying to do at Crow, is not always just be responding to these emergencies, but to try in some fashion to help educate people and prevent some of these issues from happening. So we have been much more active in terms of research and trying to find a cure for red tide poisoning and really getting people to sort of change the way they live. You know, it used to be that the background extinction rate before there were a lot of humans was about 5 to 6 species a year. Now it's 5 to 6 species a day. Man. We really have to make a change or we're not going to be protecting our species.
You mentioned a couple times the research that you're doing out there, and part of that research involves trying to find better ways to treat the animals that are impacted by red tide. I'm wondering if you had any breakthroughs with the huge numbers of animals that were coming to you.
Yes, that was really the silver lining in the cloud of red tide that spread over us, is that because we were an epicenter for that disease, we could really study and get a lot of information about better ways to predict survival, better ways to treat these animals. And the good news is, if this treatment does prove to be effective, which it's looking very promising at this point, the data is looking good, then that's something that could be used in multiple species, including humans, for many types of algal poisonings or other toxins.
Well, the issue that we kept talking about with different doctors and things was the toxic situation. It's not like something you can give an antibiotic for. And from what I understand, you just kind of had to wait it out and make them feel comfortable and try to get it to work its way out of the system. So you've got a treatment system that you're working on that might get that stuff out of the system faster?
That's right. We're basically looking at an antidote for that that binds what are known as lipid-soluble toxins or fat-soluble toxins, which brevetoxin is one of those. So it might be very useful, and it's the first time it's ever been looked at in species other than humans and domestic animals. So
well, that's really interesting.
It's very promising.
So not only were you in the front lines of trying to help these animals, but you're also in the front lines of research because it was really kind of an epicenter.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things when you support Crow, that's one of the things that you're supporting is not just us caring for those individual animals, but producing the research that will allow us to share these advances in wildlife medicine with the rest of the world.
Yeah, even just down the street at Von Ark's Wildlife Hospital, they would probably benefit from some of the research that you're able to do. And I'm sure that back and forth, too.
Absolutely. You know, to me, the name of the game is collaboration, which is why I think this is such a great setup here today. It's really exciting to work with a lot of different partners and see what we can all do to protect our species for Earth Day and all days.
One of the things that I thought about numerous times since talking with you so many times during the height of the red tide and blue-green algae is, how is Crow doing financially? Because it was a lot of work for a lot of people and a lot of materials and the tubs for the turtles. I mean, all the different things that you had to go through. I know people are responding by continuing to bring injured wildlife to you. Have people responded also by increasing in donations because they're aware of you? I mean, are you doing okay?
Well, it certainly made a dent in our finances. We were spending a lot more money that was not really anticipated initially in the budget. And of course, we had falling revenue because tourism dropped off a cliff, basically. So we had less money coming in and a lot more money going out. And we are definitely still working to recover from that. So we certainly invite people to come to Crow and learn more about what we're doing out there and why it's so important to help support our work, because it really makes a difference and there are things that you can do, and we'd love the chance to educate you about that and get you involved in what we do over there.
Do you need volunteers?
We always need volunteers, yes. Mm-hmm. Our volunteers, we have about 200 active volunteers, and I keep them all very busy.
Yeah, I imagine you do. Are there any animals that you treated during the course of the last year or two that kind of stick out in your memory? I know you try not to get emotionally attached to a lot of them because you don't know who's going to make it and who's not. You don't even give them names until you're sure they're going to be sticking around, staying in your facility, too. Are there any that kind of stick out in your memory, though?
Well, certainly the sea turtles, really. It was a huge impact. Normally, red tide season goes from October to April, but in 2018, the season continued throughout the year, and that really impacted our adult sea turtles that were coming in to nest, and some of those are critically endangered species, and we were just seeing them pouring through the door. At one point, our caseload for brevetoxicosis in sea turtles is up by 300%. So that really is something that sticks with you.
Yeah, and I think everybody remembers the whale shark and all the dolphins. It was tough. And then all the birds. I mean, countless birds, really.
Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of birds.
Speaking of birds, you brought somebody with you today.
We did. We have Mina, our great horned owl, joining us today with her handler, Rachel Rainbolt, who is also in charge of education at Crow. And we certainly invite you to come out and see our amazing educational ambassadors that we have at Crow. We also have a new flight for them, so you can actually see them up close and personal.
So how did this particular great horned owl end up coming to you?
Mina came in with a wing that had been amputated. She had lost it in the wild. And interestingly, she had already begun to heal from that. It was during the breeding season, so probably her mate continued to feed her. And at some point, when he realized she was not going to be able to fly anymore, abandoned her. And then she wound up down on the ground and came into us. But because she had already basically healed from this injury, we thought she would make a great educational ambassador, and she has. She's an amazing bird. It's very cool to have a great horned owl on the glove in your hand.
She's pretty cool looking. And you know, when you look her in the eye, you just kind of feel sort of intimidated because she's got that look.
You know? That look that says, this is my happy face.
This is my resting owl face, we'll call it, right? So do you do anything right now to prepare as summer approaches? And we're going to be looking at releases most likely and the possible reintroduction of maybe red tide. Are there things that you're doing to get ready now that you might not have done before?
I think the most important thing that we can do is finish up some of this research and see if we can get a treatment on board. And so far, again, the numbers are looking amazing. So in the literature, it describes a survival rate of about 25 to 33% for brevetoxicosis in seabirds. We're currently enjoying survival rates of around 85%.
Oh, that's really promising.
We really think that this is going to make a big difference. And if that's the case, then looking for the funding that will allow us to be able to afford this medication.
Yeah, producing it and getting it out there. And just,
exactly, yeah. And educating others about it. So we're going to be doing a lot of speaking both nationally and internationally this year, trying to share that data with others.
Well, congratulations on some seriously groundbreaking work. I mean, that's really awesome.
Thank you, Julie.
And it was a lot of work. I can't believe you're still able to keep your eyes open and walk around. You were so busy during it. Do you have anybody, any turtles out there right now or anybody?
We do. And then we are also working, again, collaborating with some amazing partners. So the Loggerhead Marine Life Center and Moat Marine and others, again, looking at the same treatment in sea turtles.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that people can do to help Crow out? I know you said you have a lot of volunteers. Is there anything else people can do?
Yeah, please follow us on social media. So we have Facebook and Twitter and all those great things. Please join our website. We have live animal webcams where you can see, for example, our super cute river otter that's recovering in our cages now. And get involved. Become a member. Come out to our amazing educational presentations where we can tell you what it is that you can do to contribute on Earth Day and every day.
I really love talking with you. I don't know if it shows, but I want to tell you that I really appreciate you coming and meeting us here today and telling us about how things are going. Heather Barron is the Medical and Research Director at Crow on Sanibel. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Julie.
And I want to thank our earlier guests on today's show, Dr. Heather Skaza-Acosta from the Conservancy of Southwest Florida and FGCU, John Cassani and Ed Shanouskas from Calusa Waterkeeper, Captain Daniel Andrews, founder of Captains for Clean Water, and Paul Shariari from Ecomedes Incorporated. I got it right. If you missed any of today's show, you can always hear all of our episodes in their entirety on our website at gulfcoastlive.org, or you can subscribe to our podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts. Our show today was produced by Mike Canary and myself. Our director is Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Also today, thanks to WGCU's Associate General Manager of Technology and Operations, our chief engineer, Kevin Trueblood, who made the tech side of today's show happen. Thanks so much, Kevin. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM, Fort Myers, 90.1, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.